Welcome to AI Talks, the podcast that takes ideas seriously. I'm Paul Lay, Senior Editor at Engelsberg Ideas, and I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast, recorded in Washington, D.C., Edvides Bayarunas, CIPA Visiting Fellow, and Christian Prick, Estonian Ambassador to Washington. Welcome, both of you. It's great to have you here. And I want to talk about the Baltic states. We've covered them quite a lot in Engelsberg Ideas for obvious reasons, given the Baltic states' proximity to the Soviet Union. You've been aware of being on the front line, former Soviet republics too, aware of the existential nature of the threat from the United States. How have things changed in recent years since the attack, or how have you responded to that?
Well, first, thank you for inviting us to the podcast and giving us this opportunity to discuss those issues. So I think for the Baltic states, what has not changed is the overall perception of the existence of a Russian threat and also the nature of this Russian threat, that our national security documents for a long time have stated that Russia is the only country that does possess the capabilities and may actually have the intent to challenge the existing international order or the European security architecture by using the means of force. And what we see happening in Ukraine, certainly since the February of 2022, but I would point out to the actual start of this conflict in the year of 2014, yeah, has only proved that. And we very clearly also understand that this threat is not limited to certain, let's say, border areas between Russia and the countries in its periphery, but this threat actually is something that is way wider. And we believe that that by now we are much more than any time before in recent memory on the same page with our allies here in the US, but certainly also in Europe.
And it's now 20 years since both countries have been members of the EU and NATO. What difference has that made? And also, I suppose, the addition of neighbouring countries like Sweden and Finland to NATO as well.
Also, from one side, thank you very much for this invitation. This is really very interesting to talk to the Swedish Foundation, yes, I might use this term. For me, as an ambassador, I've formerly been ambassador to Sweden, to UK, and to Russia. So I think this covers all all aspects. I think I would start from not criticizing you, but just alluding to the former Soviet Union title. This is probably what we try to not disagree, but we're not using this.
Yeah.
We're not using the title former British colony in case of US. This is a joke. But Baltic countries, also this, you know, using the term Baltic countries have both positive and negative aspect.
Yeah.
Positive because it's concentrated and sharpening the problem because we are being part of Soviet Union, although annexed not by our will. We have specific geographical closeness to Russia. So, of course, to talk about Baltic countries as an entity is have sense. Also because we've been exposed for many years, as my colleague Christian mentioned, of Russia's threats. From other side, what is happening now in Ukraine is neither Ukrainian war, which is sometimes you might have in the media, or the war of Russia against specific part of Europe.
This is
the war against global border. At least this is the war against Europe, against democratic West. So what is now EU is doing, what is NATO is doing, this is what we've been appealing for many years.
Yeah.
Not because we were, again, this title, Baltic countries, Russophobic countries. Because of our proximity, we were sensing more what is happening in Russia, whether Russia's movement towards democracy was absolute. Of course, now, compared with even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, to talk about Russia's threats is much easier. In a way, Russia assisted us in explaining what are the Russia's threats and what are the possible consequences and what we should do. So, we don't need now to lecture our Western European friends. Mm. All the problems are here. The problem, of course, is the speed, and we just very much lagging still behind the speed. We should be better prepared in advance. we should have more troops in the front line. And this is where we need to get more sort of better speed. We're doing fine. We have, I speak on behalf of Lithuania, of course, we have a German brigade agreement. There will be German brigade. We have American troops, very important. NATO, American troops. So this is what we will always emphasize. We are now engaged in all sort of cooperation. Baltic countries, trilateral, is only one element. Important, but only one element. But there are much more elements. Nordic Baltic, JEF, Joint Expeditionary Forces, which would engage Nordic Baltic and UK and Netherlands. There are, of course, via Lithuania, there is access to Poland. We also have very strong cooperation. And, of course, Germany. So we are in geography on various variables. Answer to your question on Swedish Finnish membership. And again, I've been ambassador to Sweden 2011-16, and Sweden was already moving very close to NATO. Yeah. Sweden was qualified as most integrated non-NATO member then. But Sweden covers strategically important aspect of Baltic security. Any reinforcement to the Baltic countries might come in three ways. Land, via Suwalki Gap, which is sometimes in the war might be in danger, by air and in naval support. So, of course, when you look to geography, Sweden and Finland play a dramatic role. Swedish and Finnish membership provides us this security space which was lacking. We were like an annex of NATO in the north. Now we are part of Baltic Sea security, which is the, some people are even joking, NATO internal link. So, to summarize, we should be better doing and more rapidly doing things in our defense, but we never been as secure as now because of we have troops on the ground, we have understanding by our Western European friends, Europe and United States.
And what about the resilience of the two countries, as well as Latvia? It always struck me that NATO is quite hesitant to develop the kind of contingencies that were needed of the Russian threat. Changed a little bit in 2008, I suppose, when Russia invaded Georgia, which seemed to be a moment of some shift. And then there was a bigger shift in 2014 with the first invasion of Ukraine. I mean, what preparations were made by your countries then internally?
We have always held a very firm view that for the NATO collective defense to work properly, it has to start from home, from ourselves. This is also the reason why Estonia has not moved to 2% only now that this has become so very urgent or almost fashionable. But this happened in 2014, so more than 10 years now. And we are at the level of 3.5% of defense spending right now. So national defense has been something that we have taken seriously forever, I would say. Estonia has never done away with the reserve-based territorial defense concept. So in our own defense plans, contingency plans, there has always been the potential of Russia becoming an aggressive actor that we need to deter and defend against. Has always been there. Now, what has changed since 2008 and 2014? Certainly, we have adjusted our own approaches here and there, even though there is not a fundamental change in understanding of the nature of threat. We have certainly put way more emphasis, and this is where me and Ambassador Bairunas first met, in fact, was how to set up and strengthen the whole-of-nation defense or the whole-of-nation security concept, how to deal with the non-military or non-linear threats, how to make sure that every single citizen considers a national defense not as something that the militaries take care of, but that actually starts from everyone's home. And I believe that we've come a long way on this path. But then again, it's like, you know, cycling. There is constantly something to take care of. You cannot ever stop. No. And you rather have to build this resilience over time rather than expect the country to be ready, if necessary, at the last moment or when the threats actually manifest themselves in real life.
And would that be an experience shared in Lithuania?
Indeed, very much. It's here I can only echo to Ambassador Brick saying that the defense and resilience of the organization like NATO-EU Well, a region as a country starts from national level. This is the basis, though. Because you need to set up your coordination system, you need to agree on procedures, and you need to have this not only all government, but also all society approach, where there will be not only horizontal cooperation between various institutions, branches, border guards, army, intelligence, but also this vertical, as we say, government, society, and even to the private companies.
Yeah.
And here, there was no secret that we looked to the example of the Nordic countries, which is what in Cold War was known as a total defense. Finland requalified this, or now defined this in more modern term, comprehensive security. Mm. But the essence remained the same, actually, which was very much also based with U.S. Civil War, militia type of man, but also total defense. Total defense is you are Lithuanian, or in case Estonia, Estonian, and you defend your country. Whether you are IT specialist defending in cyber, or you are Lithuania's volunteer, because we have also volunteer army, although you army or intelligence, or you're a doctor. So this is what the concept is about. And the idea is that potential aggressor, and here we should be very not naive calling aggressor in general term, is Russia. Aggressor should know that in case of any plans to do something wrong, whether this is conventional war or hybrid or asymmetrical activities, there will be resistance, there will be resilience. This is the essence of the concept is about. But while we are mentioning this, emphasizing the national defense and national level character, I am still very strong proponent of cooperation. And here we, in our first years of independence, started actually from trilateral Baltic cooperation. There was one upon a time Baltic battalion in Adaji near Riga. Although as a concept, it became a bit obsolete with our membership to NATO.
Yeah.
But it acted as a good way to promote this very philosophy of trilateral cooperation. We have in Estonia, in Tartu, Baltic Defense College, which trains our officers up to the major level. Which again, not only they are Lithuanians, Latvians, Estonians are together, but they are trained by international instructors, officers of the procedures. So they know each other. They establish common personal links.
There's a common culture there.
But also we know that if we will be fighting, we will be fighting together.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine something wrong happens in Estonia and we Lithuania are deliberating what to do.
There will
be a clear answer.
Yeah.
We will, of course, ask what to do for our Estonian friends, but we will be here to support.
Yeah.
So the same we expect from other allies. So this cooperation is tremendous. Intelligence sharing, knowledge sharing, compensating some of our weaknesses. Again, on strategic level, we have excellent example that the NATO provides us with the air policing. We do not have our fighters, and the NATO provides. Mm-hmm. Again, but then we compensate something NATO. For example, Lithuania, during the peak of engagement of NATO in Afghanistan, was supplying NATO with well-qualified special operations soldiers, again, as our niche. So this is what this cooperation is about, national level, but also see how we can do internationally.
And what about in terms of cyber security?
I mean, cyber is one of the domains for conflict, for sure, these days. So,
but Estonia has a very good reputation, I understand.
Just before coming here, I had a long meeting with the deputy chief of Estonian cyber security agency, having meetings here with his American counterparts, which I think was a further kind of proof to me that there is something that we have done right, and there is something that we can share and cooperate on with the United States. But it's very clear that cyber as a domain and cyber as both the domain of threats but also opportunities will not go anywhere. Mm. It may become more complex. The development of technology may bring new challenges there. But we have certainly focused on developing our own cyber defense capabilities while also acknowledging that there is no effective cyber defense without offensive capabilities since the very early days. So we also acknowledge that not only our military, let's say, communications or command and control systems, but certainly pretty much anything and everything that we rely on as critical services in the civilian world relies on the integrity and proper functioning of information systems. which means that the cyber defense has to be there to defend the whole of society, that the military has to acknowledge the, let's say, dependencies, if not vulnerabilities, that they may have on the civilian services and civilian companies, while also the civilian companies and civil society as such should also understand that there are cyber-related vulnerabilities, but maybe also opportunities there that will become relevant in the case of conflict and war. Hence, there is no way anyone that operates, let's say, the critical information systems, that they can stay out of the conflict or pretend as if this doesn't matter to their business or their customers.
And Ambassador Bayerunas, the question of Kaliningrad is an interesting one, particularly from a Lithuanian perspective. How do you deal with that?
First of all, if I may add one sentence or two, what Ambassador Prick was mentioning about the cyber defense, but a bit in wider sense, that sometimes the Baltic countries, you might find this in various articles or analysis, would mention as a sort of a playground of Russia's various asymmetrical activities, cyber, hybrid. So it is probably true because we were first, Estonia was the first to experience massive Russia cyber attack in 2007, if I'm not mistaken. There were many, many cases where Russia was using disinformation, other malign activities.
Yeah.
So indeed, Baltics are on the front line, even not only in conventional war, but also in this asymmetrical warfare. But we have also can be shown Baltic as an example that we did a lot in countering this. And what Estonia is sharing on cyber security, Lithuania as well, or we are sharing on how to counter disinformation, this is also our small contribution to the NATO and EU understanding, and also as far as the NATO-EU measures to counter these activities. On Kaliningrad, in this optimistic and romantic period of 90s, we were definitely hoping that Russia, I mean, this was still under Yeltsin, Russia will be more beneficial if Kaliningrad will be converted into demilitarized economic free zone type of Hong Kong. And that probably would be better for inhabitants of Kaliningrad. It would be also beneficial for Russia. It would be also very positive from our countries in the region. So imagine if Kaliningrad will be acting as a hub of Russia's knowledge and industrial base and cooperation and trade. But this probably was only in this romantic first years, and with Yeltsin continued to strengthen his grip. But of course, with the Putin, the Kaliningrad is again converted into the military zone. Of course, we know that there is high concentration of Russian forces here, quite high readiness. We only can guess how rockets are installed in Kaliningrad. So Kaliningrad is the military factor. If 10 years ago it was less a factor because of, at least by our knowledge, the military in Kaliningrad, they were receiving lesser training, lesser. Now, after a series of exercises, including Zapad, very notorious no Russian exercises, the Kaliningrad forces, readiness forces, combined with Belarusian forces east of us, they reach quite a high level of readiness. But what we should do, of course, this is one of the key factors also in NATO defense planning, because I mentioned previously the Suwalki corridor factor. So, of course, if Russia would use scenario that forces from Kaliningrad and Belarus will join together and they would cut in the land terms, will cut Baltics from NATO land supply. Of course, it would be quite dramatic for our defense. And this is where, coming back to what I spoke previously, Swedish-Finnish membership adds important element in supporting here. Kaliningrad is, we still have minimum cooperation with Kaliningrad, including Lithuania provides, as part of the EU, Russia-Lithuania 2003 agreement, free and facilitated transit of by train of Russian inhabitants to and from Kaliningrad. Of course, there is a minimum of material, logistical supply to Kaliningrad. Of course, with the war, we cut any possible military transit, which was existed before the war. So we follow the situation closely. We constantly alerting our allies. And for now, I think the situation is okay.
I would only add here that as a Russian exclave, far from the mainland, as the land sandwiched between two NATO members, we know that this can be a vulnerability for Russia. I'm pretty sure that they also know that, and I hope that they act accordingly.
Let's hope so. The other thing I want to discuss here, we've at the World Order Conference, there's a lot of talk about whether the Ukraine war is existential. It's clearly existential for Ukraine. Does it feel existential for Lithuania and Estonia?
It's very much existential. And I think I will reject this sometimes simplistic media articles about, you know, the Baltics are the next. This is not as simple. No.
Yeah.
We are the next, probably, as far as Russia's interest to engage NATO, to irritate NATO with various scenarios or rhetoric. So, yes, we are. But as far as the military preparation, and we are NATO members, so, of course, it's we are far from being under Russia's direct attack.
Article 5 matters.
Absolutely, Article 5 matters. And here, Ukraine is existential. If Ukraine have problems, territories annexed, or even the government is in danger, so, of course, this issue, Baltic annexed, would definitely might come as a reality. Mm. And here is when I sometimes explain to our foreign friends, you know, why Lithuania, you are so much flagging everywhere Ukraine as an issue, because it's our war. And this is how Lithuanians, not only government level people at the government level, but also society, how this is how we understand. This is our war. So what is happening in the front line, Kursk, in defending of Pokrovsk, everything, this is like a Lithuania's territory. Of course, I might allude this also to the historical ties between Lithuania and Ukraine. And Lithuania, Grand Duchy of Lithuania, once even being up to the Kiev and Black Sea. But this is, let's leave history aside. Ukraine is existential because if there is no direct existential problems for Europe, this is already a European war. This is why we try to engage our European partners to understand this is our war. But also, as it was spoken in a few sessions today and yesterday at the Kissinger's World Order Conference, this is also a factor endangering world norms and values. So from this angle, this is also world, global war, and we should deal with this in not only sort of letting Ukraine to win, which is one element, but also engaging all. And this is where the sanctions are about. This is where Europe and all the democratic world came together to isolate Russia politically. Lithuania's still member of European Parliament, Andrius Kubilius, who is hopefully next, after confirmation, next European Commission member from Lithuania with the defense in Cosmos, actually, portfolio. Andrius Kubilius within European Parliament was very much developing scenario, which I personally I like very much. Scenario is very simple. First of all, we need to concentrate on Ukraine's victory. Ukraine winning against Russia. This is the bottom line from where we start to fix European security problem. Then integrating fully Ukraine in our sphere, you know, supporting militarily, economically, EU-NATO membership, important. And then, of course, supporting Russia in moving in democratic way. As a former Lithuanian ambassador to Russia, I know this is not happens tomorrow and not neither day tomorrow. It might take long, and even if at all, we might fail. But this is how we see consequence. Ukraine winning against Russia, and then we support Russia's integration into the our democratic world with the democracy. But again, this is
may be a long way off.
Very long.
Very long way off. And before that, as also Ambassador Pajarunas said, our people certainly feel and understand the existential nature of this conflict. After all, again, this is not that much about Estonia or Latvia or Lithuania, at least not only about our countries. After all, my capital city, Tallinn, is as far from Kiev as roughly as Berlin is. So what happens in Kiev is just as much the matter for countries further away from Russian borders. But we all have to remember, for example, the way Russians moved towards this full-scale aggression. When in December 21, Russia presented the ultimata to United States and NATO, where they laid out their vision of fundamentally changed European security architecture. These ultimata in themselves would have changed the way our nations and other nations in Europe would have felt or lived after that. This would have pretty much made NATO and United States participation in defense of the NATO alliance redundant. Russian leaders have openly and repeatedly stated that they have not given up on their strategic objectives and they are willing to return to these treaty proposals. So this is very much about the future of transatlantic security architecture. But just as my colleague stated, ultimately this is about the rules of the game globally. It's about challenging the role of United States as the ultimate underwriter of the Western world security. And it's very much about what is tolerable, what is not. As a few speakers have pointed out during the conference here, that after all, it's not just an aggression. Aggression is awful in itself, but it's an aggression of the permanent member of UN Security Council against another nation that has been condemned by an overwhelming vote in this very same UN General Assembly, where the member of UN Security Council has been declared an aggressor. So what grounds would be left there for any country to believe that the international order still works for them if this aggression goes unpunished?
Well, thank you, gentlemen. That's a good point on which to end. Thank you, Ambassador Prick, Ambassador Bayarunas. It's been very insightful. Thank you very much. Thank you.